This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for joining us today. The Wizard of Waukesha has died. Les Paul was known worldwide as a guitarist and, perhaps more importantly, as an innovator. Paul is widely credited as building the first solid-body electric guitar and developing recording techniques such as overdubbing, recording one source multiple times, which he first used with his wife, performer Mary Ford, in the late 1940s and early 1950s. The electric guitar Les Paul designed for the Gibson Company in 1952 is still one of the company's most popular models. Paul made records for decades, winning a Grammy as late as 1976. He recorded his last album in 2005 when he turned 90. Last year, an exhibit honoring the music and work of Les Paul opened at Milwaukee's Discovery World Museum. As Les Paul's House of Sound was getting set to open, WUWM engineer Tom May and I sat down with Les Paul himself. Les Paul, welcome to Lake Effect. It is such a pleasure to meet you and an honor to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And welcome home.
It's good to get home. It's changing, my goodness. It's changing. But it's so good to be in the Midwest after being in the East. I told Mary, I says, wait till you come with me to the Midwest. Says, well, what's different? I says, I can't explain it. But I says, people are different. They're the kind of people where I grew up, and so I'd notice it, and you may not notice it, you know. But when she came to Milwaukee, she was very surprised. And that's where Mary and I started, is right here in Milwaukee. And, of course, I started in Milwaukee, and so I'm going to end up back in Milwaukee. So,
when you were growing up in Waukesha, when did you start playing with sound? When did you start thinking, I can make something to make this sound different?
I guess right from the beginning. I was always interested in these things that I hadn't figured out. Being born brand new, there were many things that I said, what's that? You know, so you hear radio for the first time or play a piano or a Victrola. You're talking on a telephone. All these things are terribly important. But what makes them work? And that was my main interest, is to what makes them tick. So I would go out to TMJ and stand under the transmitter and listen to the clock tick and the hum of the transmitter. And the guy turning a page in his reading of the script. And I found out it's moving your fingers on the strings, your breathing, everything. And I was just fascinated that if a train went by, that the bay window at a certain frequency would vibrate, sympathetic vibration, and I could damp it with my hand. So I would go to school and ask the teacher, saying, this guy is something else. He's asking all these weird questions. We were at the library most of the time finding the answer. And why does I hit that plank? That plank plays one note, and the plank next to it, this is going up the stairway. And I could actually play a whole song, like a xylophone, by just tapping it. And one note was not quite in tune, so I was sanding it. And my brother says, that nut is at it again. Boy, I had quite a reputation around my house. But my mother was, she says, he'll fix it. He's just curious. He wants to know.
Do you remember what the first thing you invented was to change sound?
Yes. Yeah, it was a harmonica rack. And the harmonica rock you got from Sears and Roebuck, you put it on your chest, and a harmonica is locked in, and you can play that harmonica and then play your guitar here. But you couldn't do anything. You're locked. The harmonica is locked in. And I says, no, I want to tape two harmonicas together, and I want to play four different keys. And so I just drilled a hole in each and took a coat hanger. My brother worked for the Bell Dye Works, and so they clean clothes there. So I got a lot of clothes hangers. And I made my first invention, which was that I can remember that was really, really, really super. And that meant with my chin, I can pick what key harmonica I want to play in. And that was completely different than anybody had.
How old were you?
I don't know.
A kid?
Kid, real kid, yeah. A rotten kid.
No, you were curious. You were curious.
Oh, yeah. My mother would always say, he'll get it back together again.
And did you?
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
Taking that idea of wanting to change sound, wanting to find it and refine it, did you always know what you were trying to get to?
Oh, yes.
So you always had something in mind first.
Well, that goes even today. Before I do it, I don't turn the machine on until I know what I'm going to do. I don't want to ever even entertain the idea that I'm going to turn the machine on and the machine's going to find it for me. I don't believe in that way, and I think most of the kids today turn the machine on and then go looking for it.
Did you ever find anything along the way that surprised you as you were looking for the thing? You knew what you wanted.
Oh, yes. Full of surprises. Full of surprises. Most of my inventions, most of what I play, are all accidents. They're accidents that happen. That on your way here, something diverts you over to go this way. By George, I hit it. And so accidents are terribly important. You don't realize it's an accident. You thought you thought it out, but really it's just happened to be there because that's what you did. You got there.
Do you have a favorite accident that you can think of?
Oh, I can think of many. I think of accidents, many, many cases. Some of the literally accidents. I tip a car over. For 2 years I'm going to be in the hospital. And the doctor says it's going to be a long time before you get where you're operating again. And I had a chance to learn to play all over again because I'm not going anywhere for 2 years. I might as well correct some of my problems. And as you lay there with all your bones broken and everything else, unless the nurse is around, if you're not looking at the nurse, you're thinking about your problem, your other problem, right? And that problem is terribly interesting. And you do learn how to change things and say, when I get well, here's what I'm going to do. And there you are. You're loaded with all kinds of great ideas. You know, just itchy to get to play the new things or do the new things that you wish to do. And that's how many of the things came about, by accident. But this happened to be a literally physical accident.
Did overdubbing come out of that?
Oh, sure. The first overdub was because my bass player left and I had one more song to do. And the guitar player left and there was no one there but myself. And I got this fold-down bed and this homemade recording gear that I got. And I says, Jiminy Christmas, they're gone. and I wanted to play Limehouse Blues, and I don't have them. And I'm dying to play Limehouse Blues, so I figured, well, I can lay down the chords to Limehouse Blues so I can play along with it. But I missed the bass player. And so I says, I think what I'd do is I'll record the widest grooves that I can and then record the second part in between the two grooves. And so I had groove number one and groove number two. I made a record for Capitol jesting with them and having fun with the president. I says, here's your next hit. And I gave him two great songs, How High in the Moon and World's Waiting for the Sunrise. And he heard World's Waiting for the Sunrise, and he says, wait till you hear this. He says, oh, my God. He says, come on in the other room. So he brings everybody in. He says, I want you to hear something. And I made this record, so there's two records. One of them plays How High the Moon, the other one plays World's Waiting for the Sunrise. Depends upon when you drop the needle down. It's like...
which one you get?
Which road you go on. You either go on the first, the outside lane, or you got the inside lane. You're on the left side of the road, the right side of the road.
So you had two concentric grooves cut in the, in the
exactly
same side
right.
of the record.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And so when he played it, he says, no, that's not the song. He says, turn the record over. He says, there's nothing on the other side of the record. And he says, what are you talking about, nothing on the record? He just left. He couldn't have taken it with him. He says, I've played it since he left. So he says, play the record again. He played the record again. It was a song. Then he says, am I going crazy here? One time I'm hearing one song, next time I'm hearing another song. And so he finally figured it out, and he called me back, and he said, boy, there's no end to it. He says, geez, we could put a record out. And they buy the record, and they get one song, and next time they play it, they got another song. If we'll drive the disc jockey crazy. And that's the kind of stuff we would do, yeah.
Tom and I were talking about this earlier. The first time that overdubbing was done, I mean, we're so used to it in modern recording. Everyone does it.
Everybody.
Yeah, and there are people that really, honestly, wouldn't be around if there wasn't overdubbing because they don't sing that well.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, I thought we could sing that well and we could play that well.
And
but
you could.
The multi-track recording gives you so many different degrees of latitude that you can do that you can't do any other way.
I just got the signal that we're supposed to be wrapping up.
Just don't pay any attention. Pay any attention to
my fine with me. We could talk all night, but I don't want to keep you up either. But I wanted to just kind of talk a little bit about music. As you listen to the music now, and particularly jazz, are there people that excite you? Is there something exciting going on in music?
Well, you know that knob on that radio. If you don't like what you're listening to, you can go move. And I reach for that knob a lot. And when I hear something where I say, well, this is garbage, and so this is not for me, so goodbye. And I go to the next one, and I find something that makes me happy. I may be interested in Art Tatum for 5-10 minutes. I may want to listen to Django Reinhardt, and I want to hear a few minutes, and I say, look, that's enough of that. I want to listen to something else. And then there's so many that you just don't want to hear one bar, and you say, that's goodbye, goodbye. And so you have your favorites, you have your different types of music, and there's always surprises with a guy trying something new and different. And that's why I believe in this Les Paul House of Sound that you have to be careful in teaching the fellow, whether it's electronics or whether it's in the music. And when you're playing the guitar, I'm saying, hey, you can hold the guitar this way, you can hold the guitar over, play it this way. And what you have to prove to this youngster, okay, while he's playing something that's just spectacular, fast, okay, is not the complete answer. The complete answer is that I can take, and I've done this all my life, and so I've made a career of it, and this is analyzing how to say, I'm going to make that lady right there and make her cry. And so I take the guitar and I play Over the Rainbow, and 8 bars, there's a tear coming right down her eye. Okay, I'm doing that with 1 or 2 notes. I'm not doing running all over the instrument. Guy said, my God, look how fast he can play the guitar. I did that. But I learned many, many years ago that of all the records I ever sold, how many were or boom, boom, boom. And then I found out that 1 note made more money, sold more records, and was accepted. And you become much, much bigger by playing the melody, okay, and respecting the guy that wrote Stardust, or whether he wrote September Song. Play it the correct way. The secret is not to play something else, but to play something that is better than what the guy wrote. Otherwise, don't go there. Okay. And this is something that very few people in the business know today. It's amazing. I got my own group. And I have players in my group that are racehorses. They're on an ego trip. And they're not thinking of the other guy. When I bring a guest up on the stage, a whole secret to me, the secret is that here is a person on that stage. He is the picture. And I am the frame. And I'm the frame around the picture to make the picture look better. So my job is to make this guy, God, I want to make him the best that he can be made. You can't do that if I'm taking this picture and outplaying him, okay, and I'm cutting him, as they call it today, you know, jam sessions yesterday. But that isn't where it's at. Where it's at, I tell my players over and over, that person that comes on the stage is a star. And from that point on, don't play over him, play under him. Compliment and make him bigger. And so just say, don't be a racehorse. Just lay back there and listen to what the other guy has to say. And it's got to be like a poem. If it's moon here, it's June over here. And I don't want to put Emil there because it don't go with June at all. I don't know if I'm making sense to you guys.
Oh, you absolutely are. Yeah. Les Paul, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk to us.
It was my pleasure.
Somewhere there's music. Guitar virtuoso and master innovator Les Paul sat down with us in June of 2008 as an exhibit honoring the Waukesha native was set to open at Discovery World at Pier, Wisconsin. Les Paul died yesterday from complications of pneumonia. He was 94 years old. The song we're listening to now is one of the earliest recorded examples of the overdubbing technique Les Paul developed, a 1951 recording of How High the Moon by Les Paul and his wife, Mary Ford. Until you will still my heart, how high. up after a break, music from the band Slide. The Dublin-based group is playing Irish Fest for the first time this year. We get an in-studio performance next on Lake Effect. This is WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.